Hello and welcome to the Truck and Driver podcast. Matt Ireland sat here today and I'm with a good friend of mine and I believe possibly an unofficial record holder, probably one he didn't want to receive, Ben Mitchell. Ben, how you doing?
Yeah, man, all good. I'm all good, thank you very much.
How's your weekend been? Has it been all right?
You know what? As you know, I'm in the office at work now and it kind of all like spills over, you know what I mean? When you work in a transport office as a transport manager, it never stops. You know, your phone doesn't stop, emails come in, and you're just permanently on it, you know what I mean? And trying to live a life with where was hard work. But yeah, it's not been too bad. Been trying to relax this afternoon and looking forward to doing this and finally doing it after many false starts, as you know.
Well, yeah, we've been trying, haven't we? So how did you end up in the office? Because you obviously started off as a driver. I mean, how did you even begin in the world of transport? Were your family involved, or was it just like previous people who just had a fascination with trucks?
Dad was a lorry driver. I'm not sure before him if anyone was or not, but Dad was a driver. From like the age of two or three, I was in the passenger seat of lorries all over the UK, then as I got older into Europe. And then when I was 16, I was working in a garage on £35 a week, and the truck wash lad, Ashfield Trailers, he got the sack for reasons unknown, I can't remember now, and I got a phone call saying, do you fancy washing trucks? £35 a week, £100 on a Saturday to wash trucks, obviously it tops you up nicely. I did it for a couple of weeks, and Ron came up to me and said, can you drive a 7.5 tonner? I said, I don't know, Ron. So I showed him a license. Yeah, you can. And off to Paris, I went that night in a 7.5 tonner. And then that was my primary job was a trailer boy.
Yeah.
So I went out on the Arctic. I used to load, obviously, do the Ashfield, subcontracted for a company called Paris Direct in Keswick. Obviously, back in the day in the mid 90s, everyone, their dog was doing runges, like it was like Nargles were doing it, French Garden were doing it, Swithin Bank were into it, loads and loads of company going. It was good work. So you go down there, so I'd go out on a Sunday night as a trailer boy, you'd tip a Garen or Villapinte, it's like a Scottish Express load. Ironically, the Scottish Express work and the Samson transport work was based in the yard I work out of now.
Oh.
You know, so it's sort of come full circle from like 1995 to today. So you'd tip that and then you'd be into the market. You'd start at 7 on a Sunday night. You'd be into the market right on the end of your card. You'd park up, have dinner in the evening, a couple of beers, and you'd start loading at 2, 3 in the morning. And the driver back on the bay, I'd run around pumping stuff on, speaking to people, move on to the next one. Like 15, 20 collections was commonplace. Then you'd be into Runjumex, top up the groupage, or Swithin Bank, top it up, back to Luton, tip it, pick it, out on a 7.5 tonner, do a round trip in an evening. You might go out to be far as Blenhove and Abergavenny with 7 drops, Mac at Coventry Market and Birmingham Market. You'd be all over the shop, Bristol Market sometimes. You'd come back, hop in the truck, go to sleep, drive away to Paris. You'd do two of them a week. You know what I mean? It was a good baptism of fire, mate, into transport. And then it was a guy called Eric around Paris Direct. Can't remember his surname for the life of me. And me and him got on really well, and he took a liking to me. So he had me out there as like a junior buyer. So I'd go out on the Monday lorry, stay in a hotel, and he'd teach me the buying side of things. So I'd learn about buying the wholesale fruit and veg. And I did that then. Then Eric retired back to Keswick. He trusted me enough, put me out in my own little office. We moved out of Runjumex to a place just outside the market. Can't remember what it's called for the life of me now. And there was me and a bloke called Arno, a French bloke, who we just didn't get on. And I kind of blame myself a little bit. Paris Direct went downhill after Eric left the market. Not wholly down to me. And we're tipped, wherever we tipped on the way out, I think paper actually, in Marne la Vallée. I worked with my dad a lot. My dad was on the run to work, and that creates its own set of problems. Your son being your boss, you can imagine, can't you? So we're on the way into the market one night, and the phone rang. It was Ron or Jean at Ashfield, and Paris Direct had sold out the French Garden, and we're all at the job finished. So I got dropped in the market. I cleaned the office out, and I had a little B-reg fitter in a hire car. And I cleaned the office out, went back. Obviously, my dad went up to your Bruges, though, Bananas, out of Andrew's Fruit Terminal. I went back on the train, trying to explain to some French customs agents why a 17-year-old lad, sort of, Fiat Uno full of fax machines and computers, took some explaining, I tell you. got through on the train, and I don't know if you know where I mean now, but there's an Esso garage on the A2, just off the A2, on the, where the A20 and the A2 meet, sorry, and I met a bloke there in a suit and tie who gave me an envelope full of cash, took the fitter and a hire car off, and that was the end of my dealing with Paris Direct in Ashfield.
Blimey.
And I then stumbled into a job at Hill Hire,
yeah,
in the rental office. Very quickly progressed through the ranks there to like assistant manager sort of thing. And we're doing really well there, and we'll gloss over this, but I've made a mistake involving a female member of staff, which right, put me out of a job 3.5 years in, which was a real shame. That then, with what I got out of it, paid for a class one. Yeah. And I moved on for a couple of jobs, and then I ended up at RPL Transport with Danny, who is my boss today.
Right, okay.
I went to work with Danny. I'd done a little bit of European work on the 7.5 tonne in between jobs, like first line logistics in St Albans, regular exhibition work. I did a bit for them. And then I went to work with Danny at RPL, and that was a great job. Danny's a great man, well worth him now. But I always hankered after going abroad. You know, going abroad was where I always wanted to be. And yeah, I had an interview at Car Brothers, accepted a job. Danny talked me out of it, going to Car Brothers, and I stayed there for maybe a month, 6 weeks longer, and then I landed up on PTM.
Right, out of Reading.
Out of Reading, with Pete. And I'll be absolutely truthful to this day, one of the most interesting and varied jobs I have ever had.
Yeah.
You could be on a fridge one day, a flat the next, a container the next, and a tank the next. And yeah, this sounds disparaging, and it's not at all. Pete didn't care if you'd been somewhere. He'd asked you if you'd been to Greece. No, I've not been to Greece. Yeah. Good, you're off there tomorrow. It wasn't a problem to Pete, you know what I mean, if you'd been somewhere or not, because you're a driver, you got a class one, you're going to go and do your job, you know what I mean? It was,
yeah.
And the trust he put in you was immense, you know what I mean? It was a good job, PTM. And I say, to this day, for a variation of a job, it gets no better than PTM.
How old were you when you went to PTM, roughly? You remember?
23, 24 maybe?
Yeah,
24. I think I did 2.5-3 years, Pete, I can't remember. I job hopped a lot of my time, a lot of my life, you know what I mean? So I kind of lose track a little bit of the time scale of some jobs. My last stint with Pete, I was on a milk tanker.
Yeah.
And he, for Translact at Blandford Forum, Bob and I think Chris.
Oh. Yeah,
Tamix. Yeah. Tamix, that's it. Well done, you're Tamix. Good work. Yes. Bob showed no mercy, but again, our taskmaster, I never had an issue with you, Bob. Never had an issue with you at all. I know many people have spoken in many different opinions of you, Bob, but I never had a problem with the bloke. And I went in the yard one day, and I had a brand new Rothdean tank out of Cinderford, but it had no baffles in it. It was a horrible thing. I went in there one day, and in the corner of the yard was this battered Thomson Carmichael tanker, which is about 29 foot long, but that blue mudguard, you matched the blue Volvo, and I wanted it. I said, can I have that? He said, everyone hates that tank. I said, I love it, it matches your truck. And do you know what? That was the best thing ever. We were full out of milk on it. It didn't move because it was full to the brim. You know what I mean? It was fantastic. I loved it. It was a brilliant tank. But yeah, working for Pete was a really interesting job, and a lot's been said and written about the man, but I never had an issue with him, you know what I mean? Listen, he wanted his pound of flesh, as did everybody in the early 2000s, you know what I mean? But good job. Yeah. Tackle was good, work was good. We were doing a lot of Switzerland as well for UniX, who I think you and Ben spoke about in the one I listened to only this morning on the way to my mum's house. We did a lot of UniX work in Switzerland, which again, good work.
When you say about good tackle, I'm pretty sure Pete had an FL10 Globetrotter, didn't he, at one point?
That came after I left. I got sent a picture of that about 2 months after I left. I think when I left, he had just bought some Megaspace Mercedes, the MP2 variant. He's Megaspace. I get confused between Gigaspace and Megaspace nowadays. He just bought some Megaspace ones, and I got sent a picture of an FL10 Globetrotter and a Megaspace parked up somewhere in France. but yeah, I would say he bought an F7 when I was there. He had the 88, and he bought the F7, which came home. And I'll never forget it. He bought it home, and he did no more than put a flat trailer on, loaded Delaware in Byfleet, and took it to Ireland. Pete had no hesitation in that. He had no fear, that man, and fair play to him, put him where he is today, you know what I mean? He's done well for himself, he's Pete.
Yeah, it does. Was a lot of the European on the fridge, or could it have been literally any trailer abroad?
Anything.
Yeah.
We took an aeroplane wing to Luxembourg on a flat for King Kerry Haulage in Bristol. I took a forklift to Marseille docks for onward shipment to Tunisia, and then on a low loader, then reloaded at a John Deere at Arkley's Grey. For example, again, you do a Euroline to Switzerland 1 week, a flat trailer to Spain the next week, box rounds to Italy with pharmaceuticals the following week. He had about 7 or 8 trucks in Algeria. He didn't have many. He had he had 7 or 8 trucks in Algeria. He had like 14 trailers. And as I say, he had a trailer for every purpose, and he wasn't afraid to put you on something different.
Yeah.
And that's what made it such a good, interesting job, you know?
Yeah, complete variety, and also gaining an awful lot of experience rather than just being, like, say on a fridge for 3 years, where you'll know the fridge job inside out. You'll then also know, like, rope and sheeting, strapping stuff down on flatbeds, and the intricacies that goes with that, and just so on and so forth.
Yeah, that's exactly it, you know. I've always moved jobs for experience.
Yeah.
Not necessarily money all the time. And but PTM, it opened your eyes to a lot of things, you know what I mean? It really did. And it was a cracking job. And it's a couple of people there I still speak to, Johnny Vowles and Colin. Yeah, they're good blokes. But some good blokes went through the doors at PTM, you know what I mean? And I learned a lot from them people. I went there quite green, and and they taught as well, you know? And I learned very early on in my driving career, obviously through my dad. You know, you listen to those you want to teach, and you can weed out, on the mummy language, you can weed out the wheat from the chaff, so to speak, and who's telling you the truth and who's pulling the wool over your eyes. But listen to everything you're told and then make your own decisions, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. So how long were you at PTMs for then? What, a couple of years?
Two and a half years, maybe. Do you know, just sidetracking, you told me a few weeks ago, Ben made some notes. I didn't do any of that. I'm in this completely blind.
good man. Yeah. Most people are, to be fair.
Yeah. But yeah, it's about 2.5 years, I think, at the PTM. It was a cracking job. But then I think what was happening was the agency boom in about 2006 was taking off, maybe early 2007. That was taking off, and in Milton Keynes as well, and that, like, there's a golden triangle, a Lutterworth rugby and Crick. We're half out from there, and some of the rates, when you got hourly rates starting with a 2, you know what I mean? Your ears prick up, your mates you want, and you're thinking, why am I spending 3-4 weeks away at a time and at home every night and taking nearly 3 times what I'm taking? So I left PTM and tried the agency boom for 6 months, and I learned then that the money was good, but I'm not made for a blue chip company. I'm not.
Yeah,
that's what I learned.
I don't blame you.
I know I've got friends who can do blue chips, and I just can't do them. I need to have to think for myself. I'm not a number. I can't be. Yeah. I've tried it twice. Once on the agency there, once at Maritime, and neither of them ended particularly well.
I can imagine it'd just be, if you're not challenged, I think it's not fun. You're not going to, no matter how good the money is, you have to. I think you'd have to be so focused on the money to stick with a job that you really don't enjoy, I would say. And that would take some doing.
Yeah, it does, you know. And I know people who can switch off, and I can short term, but after a while, you're out on a Sunday morning at like 6 o'clock on a Sunday morning, going up the M1 to go and from Tesco up Fenlock to go somewhere, and you start to see lorries going south, you know, going abroad, and you just start getting itchy feet. You'll know the feeling, you know, you start looking at them thinking, I wonder, and you just put that thought to the back of your mind for me, and then you see another one, and then you go home, you forget about it. The following weekend happens again, and that thought grows and festers in your mind, and eventually you've got to do something about it. You can't just...
You've got to scratch that itch.
Yeah, you can, you know, and that's what I did. I actually went to Downton after that. A friend of mine was on Downton, you know, we're doing the German work, which I did a bit of. I didn't do it much really, I'd lie, but a lot of people wanted it. That was all right. And then I left Downton, so I went to... I went to work for the Swiss company after that. I had a hernia operation, and I went on day work, and I was struggling on day work. And Trans Maritime is owned, and you'll know this, by George Huber, or run by George Huber and Walter. And George's brother Peter had a transport company called Huber Transport in Zwingen, which most of the people doing Switzerland will know of. And a friend of mine, Johnny, was on there, worked on PTM. He was on there. And he phoned me up one day and he said, do you want a job? And I thought it was holiday relief. And he said, no, it's a full-time job. that was that. Then this job became the sole focus of my attention. You know what I mean? I wanted to get on that job, and that was that was one of the best jobs I ever had. That one was a round trip to Switzerland every week. You know, no pressure. Working for Switzerland, money was good. You're paid, and I have a Swiss bank account because of that job. Swiss bank account, paid in Swiss francs to a Swiss account. You had a Swiss driving license. For the purpose of driving the truck, and that was a good job.
Yeah. So is that, what, just one round trip a week?
One a week you start. So if you're on, it was a piece of cake, and how you did it was up to you. There were some people kicked the life out of it in 3.5-4 days, got home at 3 days off. Others took five and a half days and a day and a half off. But so obviously you kept the truck at home in Leighton Buzzard. They paid for your parking. They gave you an amount of money to find each month for parking a truck. So I found a place in Leighton Buzzard in a transport yard, in Caswell's yard, brilliant. Parked there, left my car there when I was working. You'd leave there, you'd get out on a Sunday, you'd be down Kestrel Sunday night, Monday morning onto the border, be in 9 times out of 10 through St. Louis. You'd tip, you could be back out by Tuesday, you could be empty and home Thursday afternoon, Matt.
Flipping
it. Perfect legally. It was a job for dreams, but the guys like Johnny on back shift, when they start on a Tuesday, they tended to tip their incoming load on a Tuesday. So they had to tip England, reload England, get down, tip, reload, and then get back home on a Saturday night. And 9 times out of 10, like, obviously Isle of Man Dave, God bless his soul, he's passed now, but he was often with us. I did a couple of back shifts, and you were chasing for that last boat on a Saturday night at Dunkirk. All the time, when I think it was 6 o'clock on a Saturday night, which is the last Dunkirk boat, and you're always chasing, watching the clock for that, you know, because you weren't off the border till like late on a Friday night, early Saturday morning, whatever. You get delays, you know, it was a nightmare back shift wise, but I much prefer going out on a Sunday. That should have a mage, you know. That was a good job. And then women
were driving Mercedes again.
I had a left hand drive, an MP1 Megaspace. People knock them. What a cracking bit of kit. Other than the Magnum, I think one of the first properly flat-floored trucks. I fell asleep one night on the top bunk. The bottom bunks were cut behind the seats, they're very narrow. But the top bunks pulled out. You drop them down, they had a little handle underneath, they pulled out and extended. So they were quite a wide top bunk. And I remember falling asleep on the phone one night to my girlfriend, and I woke up and I thought, I didn't say goodbye to her. And I was hanging off the top bunk, and I looked at the floor, and my phone was on the floor, and the back cover had popped off it. I looked at the floor and thought, that's a long way down. That is an awful long way to fall with the top bunk of a Megaspace. It was an underrated truck. It was an old one. It had done its life, but it was actually quite a good truck, you know what I mean? And they had an 1848, which I believe were a V8.
Yeah.
Only did 52 mile an hour, but it'd do that uphill and down dale. And the driver loved it. It was a really good truck. But that one was plain white.
Yeah.
The rest of them would live with that. They were a good truck. Again, after PTM, the Mercedes didn't compare to a version 2 Globetrotter, you know what I mean? It wasn't in the same league. The MP2, which some of the drivers had, they were a good truck, and they were definitely a good alternative to a version 2, you know what I mean? The MP2 Actros. But the MP1, it was old and tired. I'm sure when it was brand new, it was good, you know what I mean? But when you get something 600,000 Ks into itself, it's done most of its life. Even today, you get into a 600,000 K truck and you know you're in a truck that old, don't you?
Yes, you do, yeah. They don't seem to hold up quite as well as what they used to.
Oh, no, definitely not, 100%. We've got some 600,000 K DAFs at HPH, and you know they've done that sort of mileage, you know?
Yeah.
I left Switzerland, Women Regions, talked me out of that job. I left there, and what did I think I went? I think I came back to Downton for a little while, and then went on to Maritime. And
so I didn't realise Downton's did European work.
Yeah, so the OK magazine was printed in Germany,
right?
And Downton could run you into Kent, you tip something in Kent on a Monday morning, out to Mönchengladbach, load that, and back in.
Right.
And went at the height. Now, magazines today don't sell anywhere near the numbers they used to. But like back then, like 20, 25 trucks a week, I think it was. I might have that wrong. Wow. Somebody will correct me. And they were just heading out because you did the whole country. So you'd load in Mönchengladbach for the little wholesalers. Like Ipswich and Norwich, for example, up near yourself, they had little wholesalers there. So you'd have Ipswich and Norwich on one trailer. then somebody else might have Harlow and Chelmsford, somebody else have two Tunbridges, and that would cover the whole country. But there was Downtons, right. McFarlands and R&R in the early days. I actually worked for Fastmag, which was like the made the holding company of all three. Them three came under one banner of Fastmag. And then R&R, they came and went. McFarlane, as is well known, they ran out of money and shut the doors. And Downtons took the whole lot towards the end.
Right, okay. Yeah, so you learn a new thing every day.
Yeah, so that was that. And then I went to Maritime, and as I said earlier on, that was, at the time, Maritime was visually, they had the best trucks, they had good work, fridges and microwaves, super space cabs, Globetrotters, they had...
Need for nothing.
Yeah. And I went there, and initially, it was okay. And then I got given a permanent truck, which was an 08 plate XXLMAN. Of all the trucks they gave me, it's the one I didn't want. And from that day on, my relationship with Maritime went downhill and couldn't be salvaged, just because I hated the truck so much. I was on a contract which wasn't very good. It was all scrap metal, which I don't mind that if I had a decent truck, but I just didn't like the truck. I mean, if you don't like where you're living, then it's never going to end well, in my experience. You know what I mean?
Yeah. What did you not like about it?
I think a better question would be, what did I like? I didn't like anything.
All right, what did you like about it?
The sarcastic side wants to say the steps out of it. Nothing. I'm a big bloke. Those who know me know I'm a big bloke, right? So initially, the steering wheel was the size of a dustbin lid. It was enormous.
Yes, yeah. And apparently there is some sort of scientific reason MAN have come up with, but it is like trying to steer the Titanic, isn't it?
In a minute, I'm going to backtrack. I'm going to finish what I'm saying now. I'm going to backtrack in a second to say about MAN. So I got into it, and the seat didn't go far enough back, and you were too far forward. You were on top of the steering wheel. I had it for a week, and I was tipping Benson beds at Tewkesbury, and I didn't even know who I was. This is how much I hated it. I can remember the point at which my hatred subsided a tiny bit. I was tipping Benson beds, and I was cleaning inside it. I don't know why I hated it. And I found out this second little handle on the seat slider. I've pulled it, and nothing happened, and I'm looking at it. So curiosity got a bit of me, and I flipped the bed up, pulled this handle again, and then the seat slid right the way back. And it turns out it was, I believe there were runners for a night time, so you can slide the seat back to get away from the steering wheel to be more comfortable. Again, I might have that wrong, but that's what I got told by somebody. Well, from that point onwards, I just ran with the bottom bed up, slid the seat back a bit further, and I was more comfortable driving it, which was a big thing. But I like to see the bed folded down during the day and look at my bed made up. Having it folded up is just, it feels wrong. But again, I just didn't like it. And having an ADR was a problem. They wanted you working weekends all the time. And it was blue chip mentality. And I'm looking at a number, and I just couldn't do it. That was what it was all about. So I left. But what makes me sad about MAN, and I'm going to go back now to my dad. Back in the late 70s, and I'm sure people on here will remember, my dad worked for Kielty Freight in Luton, bringing all the MANs back in from Munich. So they'd leave on whatever day, fly out to Munich, MANs back, drop them at Swindon, Stranraer, Aberdeen, and then fly out again, two, three, four more, however many drivers were back in. And I loved MANs from my dad working with them. And over the years... Back in 1982, I think it was, I was five, we had a brand new 19321 with all the bells and whistles outside our house, with all the laurels on it, going to the NEC. Because back in the 80s, you'll never know this, the motor show at the NEC incorporated the truck show, all in the halls. And we got invited up there, 5 years old, in a little suit and tie, and I've still got the tie pin to this very day. The MAN tie pin we got, we took it up there. And I remember the conversation, 320 horsepower, son, we'll get no better than this. And I laugh about that often, because where we are today with 770 horsepower, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So loving MAN from the history, my dad then, when he went for JLS in Leighton Buzzard, he had a brand new 16331. D186 something another was your registration number, and he had a few of them over the years, and I loved MANs. So when I went to Maritime and got that one, it was almost a disappointment. I wanted to love it, and I absolutely hated it. It made me sad. I've almost felt a little bit like betraying my dad's love of MANs by hating this truck, and I did try to like it, and I just despised it. It was the worst truck I've ever had in my life.
Right, that's quite a statement, really.
It is, and those EUOA LKZ, I think it was, something like that. Oh, awful truck, awful.
So do you think you might have stuck it a bit longer if they'd given you something more agreeable?
I actually asked Steve Wheatley to be, if I could be changed into a DAF or a Scania, and he said, why is that? And I said, I'm not sleeping properly in it, which I wasn't. I didn't like it, and it was making me unhappy. And he promised me to put me into a Scania or a DAF, and it just never materialised. Yeah. So I left there, had a bit of a personal life crisis for a couple of months, and then landed up on the Dexto.
Yes.
I went on the Dexto, so I went on there.
I dare say there'll be a few people listening to this of a sort of your age, my age, our age bracket, who will remember Nadexco very well, I'd say.
I think, and I only know this through Facebook and the internet, I still, a couple of people on there I know, but I didn't really socialise much with people. A lot of them on there like the social thing, it wasn't for me. But what I've gathered looking back, anyone who's anyone had a go on a Dexto at some point, didn't they? Anyone pretty in, I know you were on the tour work, if you're a little bit different, but anyone in general audience transport had a blast on a Dexto. Chris Parrish had a go on a Dexto, Matt Campbell, Paul for the Dexto. In some form or another, most people in general European haulage had a go on a Dexto in some form or another, didn't they?
And just people as well, I found that people who I would never have thought of would gone there end up doing a bit, even if it was just like a week or so, because a lot of their drivers from memory were run by a British agency somewhere around your way. Is that right?
Yes. Now, Janet and Stuart. Now, Stuart, are you listening? I know both of them. So Optimum ran a lot of it. They ran the Dexto for quite a while. I don't know what happened. I'm not going to say anything. I don't know what happened. But what I did, I spent a little time building my own website for my own self-employed business, and I actually emailed Nadexco directly, and James Rose contacted me. So when I went to Nadexco, I wasn't through an agency, I was through James Rose. Some of them were there through another agency, I don't know which one, because I think a few agencies got involved with the Dutch companies because they realised it was like a good earner. I understand. Yeah. I know Optimum, Janet and Stuart, I know they were heavily involved because all around Linford Wood in Milton Keynes on the weekend there were all Nadexco trucks parked up, and they were all over the place. But it was my birthday actually, March the 9th, 2012. I was loading Roxelaar, Danone at Roxelaar, many people know that place. We were loading there and we'd heard rumours, it was a Friday, we'd heard rumours on the Wednesday they were struggling for money, and I was on an arm of to ship out, but me being the workaholic I am, and I don't like letting people down, I shipped out Felix on a Thursday night and got off the boat in the morning. I tipped in Holland. I had two delivery in Holland, Best and somewhere else, and I went down to Roxelaar to load, and my load wasn't ready until the morning. So a good friend of mine, Paul Clements, who I still speak to now, Paul was there, Mexidon was there, and a guy called Andy from Kent was there. And it's my birthday. How far is your town? Oh, it's only a 10-minute walk. Really? More like an hour and a half. We walked up the road from Roxelaar to the village. We were dead on our feet. We got there, but a bloke took pity on us. It's my birthday. We're getting loaded. This is like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I haven't got to tell you the rest of this story. You can all imagine where it went. But then at half past nine on my birthday night, the lad in the office, Case in the office phoned us up. Ben, I have some bad news. The Dexto is no more. He's gone skinny. He was crying. Please, can you bring the trucks back? we can't drive these the state we are, can we? So, but on a Saturday morning, I think there were 16 of us there all told on a Saturday morning, finally. And they were trying to leave us there. They said, what are we going to do? Volvo turned up mysteriously from nowhere to take their trucks back, which seemed a bit strange to me at the time. And they said, we're going to leave you, there's 16 of you, we're going to take 8 trucks and leave you 8 trucks. You can sleep, you can double up in the trucks, and we'll pick you all up Monday morning to get you home. And I was very vocal in my, I ain't having none of this, and it was a bit more unpolite than that, if that's a word. I made it very clear.
Subtle.
Yeah, it was just a good word, yeah. I said to him, I said, I'm not being funny, I said, I've got the keys to your truck, he's going back to Dunkirk, I'll leave it there for you. And very quickly, they found 2 minibuses. Some of it parked at Bletchley and some of it parked at Lymph. So the only 4 of them going to Lymph, most of the lorries were Bletchley. So they got these 2 minibuses, and they got one of the minibuses had the Nadexco trailer on, like a little trailer, a twin axle trailer, about 10 foot long. And this thing was loaded to the gunwales in everybody's possession. It's obviously, you're clearing your trucks out you've lived in for a month at a time. Mm-hmm. And that was the end of that. It was a real shame, because that was a really good job.
Yeah. It was just channel hopping, wasn't it?
It was. You know, my personal record is 3 crossings in a day. You could do Delhi XL Paddock Wood, which would have been, I think it's Brake Brothers now, I think it's Brake. You could do Brake first thing, ship out, you do a trader change, you'd go down Dunkirk, we had a little yard in Dunkirk compound, you'd change trade again, come back in, do another Delhi XL, go back and come back out again on a boat to Gullagum, load chips at Gullagum and get back in and park at Ashford. You could do 3 trips in and 3 boat crossings in a 15-hour card. It was crazy times. But
you struggle to do that now with the way Dover is. I think you're lucky to get one in.
It was good work. It was good job. And I often say to people, if I hadn't gone bust, I'd be there now. I wouldn't be there now, but I'd have stayed for a lot longer than we did. Do you know what I mean? It's a shame.
Yeah.
We just started doing some good work. Scouts Tony went down to Austria, he did in Austria. Somebody else, I went up to Hamburg a couple of times, and there was some good work on there. It was channel hopping, but to the furthest point of channel hopping. Do you make sense?
Yes, yeah. And it sounded like it was sort of expanding out, but just obviously something went wrong somewhere along the line, unfortunately.
Yeah, the only downside was 400 horsepower Volvos, you know what I mean? Because Holland's flat.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
you soon find out with your 400 Volvos coming out of Dover, didn't you, at 40 ton? But yeah, it was all right. It was a good job. And some people often say, oh, the Dutch are hard to work for. I learned very quickly, they're not being rude to you, because they're not English like we are. They just tell you something and say it. There's no emotion in how they say it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
No, it's done. Yeah. That was a good job.
What happened then?
I went back to Downers again. I needed a job. I found someone at Downers. And McFarlane's, I think McFarlane's had just gone bust when that happened.
Right.
McFarlane's had just, I phoned him on the Monday, or emailed him on the Monday, and McFarlane's had gone on the Thursday, and I went back. And then, I went back there and I did that. And then I wasn't happy. We only have a stopgap job. And I stayed there for another 18 months and then ended up on Colton Commercials, barking for a little while.
Oh, yeah, the white and blue Volvo.
End up on there because, again, they had some interesting work in the UK. Paul wasn't afraid to go anywhere. Again, in the UK, they used to do a bit of European work years ago, but not anymore. And I went there, a friend of mine was on there, the money was pretty damn good at the time, like the top end of pretty damn good. I came out of a 6-month-old Space Cab DAF and went into a 6-year-old Volvo, and I sat there on the Sunday night, my head in my hands on the steering wheel and barking, saying, Ben, what have you done? What have you done? And it's that situation of a 600,000-kilometre truck. And as it turned out, once you got used to it, it was a good truck and it was a really good job.
And again, Volvos are built to last as well, aren't they?
They are. And I'll be absolutely honest here, and if any of the family are listening now, when it comes to Volvos, I challenge you to be any man who knows Volvos better than Keith Norman. What Keith Norman didn't know about Volvo, you weren't worth knowing. Volvo used to phone Keith up and ask him how to fix their problems with their trucks. But Keith worked at Dawson's years ago. He actually knows him. Keith worked at Dawson's in Leighton Buzzard years ago, and he actually knows some people I knew from years ago. When it came to Volvos, what Keith didn't know about Volvos wasn't worth knowing. He was a good bloke, Keith, a really good bloke. And the whole place, it was a good job, you know what I mean? But like everything, I started to get hankering to go abroad again.
Yeah.
And then I didn't want to work for somebody else. And these bidding sites have been about, these any vans and Shipleys, and although you can't make a business off one, they can, I don't know what we're looking for, they can help a business, you know what I mean? So I started looking at some of these things and having a dabble, and my car snapped a cam belt about 2 weeks before Christmas. Three weeks before Christmas, start of December, snapped a cam belt on the A45 coming out of Coventry on a Saturday morning. So I needed a vehicle, and my brother said to me, I've got a mate, got a little Blingo van, do you want it? I said, yeah, why not? So I had this Blingo van for 3 weeks, and I started doing a little bit of, pardon my language, crap on these bidding sites, but it's the only word I can use for it, but I was earning like 350 quid on a Saturday morning on these bidding sites. So I started thinking about it, and I left Colton's for reasons we'll leave alone. I left Colton's at the end of the year, over Christmas time, didn't go back. I'm mulling things over, and I sent a random email out to somebody on a morning in January. FGI, the company was called, they were in Bedford. And within half an hour, this bloke phoned me back. A bloke called Brian. He said, I'm after a van for a day. I said, okay. I told him, listen, mate, I've only got a Berlingo. I need a big van. He said, how much are you paying? And he gave me a price for a day rate, and I genuinely can't remember what it was. I now know it was a lot lower than it should have been. So I found Northgate and rented a brand new transit van. Yeah. 6 months and 98,000 miles later, their van went back. Right? And I bought a Sprinter, a second-hand Sprinter, which I needed. And by this time, I was trying to cross a little bit of Europe. Again, I wasn't fully aware of the requirements of needing the logbook and whatnot and permission from the rental company.
The legalities of
it. I didn't know about that. I was a bit naive. So I got a Sprinter. And I then, somebody asked me to pick a motorbike up for them. And I've been in a few motorbikes. I had ramps, I had the proper equipment, and I knew what I was doing with one. And I went to, it was Harley Davidson at Aylesford by Waitrose on the M20. I picked his motorbike up in there, and the bloke happened to chat to me and like me, and that was it. And it turned out the bike I was delivering to Cornwall was being delivered to the man who was the second in command at KTM at Silverstone. And he took a real liking to me. So I get a random phone call saying, I've got another motorbike, can you pick up? And that started an amazing time in my life, moving KTM motorbike all over Europe.
Right.
And that was direct for KTM, that was for KTM customers. KTM had a rule at the time where they couldn't use me directly, but they could tell their customers to phone me and get me to move the motorbike for them, and KTM would pay for it, if that makes sense.
Right, okay, so, yeah.
And I was all over the place, Matt. I was going, you throw a dart at a map of Europe, I was going there with KTMs. It was just amazing, you know what I mean? And then KTM invited me to Silverstone to sit with them and tell them what I do. And they told me what I do. I had a couple of KTM t-shirts made because I was representing their company. They had a particular way that my bike handed over. I'm sure it's all changed now. And I think at the time I was the only person in the UK allowed to deliver motorbikes on behalf of KTM, other than KTM themselves.
Wow.
I was a chance in a van, Matt. That's all it was. And that kind of, that made me realise, okay, Ben, you've got to start making sure you do things properly now. And I did. I got the bed fitted to the van, and I made sure everything was above board. And not that I didn't beforehand, but I'm sure when we all start, we're a little bit cavalier. But I made sure everything was going well. But then the Sprinter...
Above board.
Yeah. But then the Sprinter I bought then started to develop problems and break down and become unreliable. In the space of 14 days, my 08 plate Sprinter cost me knocking on towards £20,000.
Cool, flipping it. What happened?
So, I was in Italy and the DPF went.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, for those who are DPFs, they will know they're the curse of every diesel engine. They're awful things. So, it went just south of Milan. So, having found the IAC breakdown with an alternator that had gone before in Germany, and that cost me £1,800 up at just by Hamburg and Rail Autohof a few weeks before. I was in Italy when the DPF went, so I learned very quickly, just phone Mercedes. So Mercedes came out, €360 just to come out and tell me I had to go into Mercedes' main dealer at Rowe.
Yeah.
I went into Rowe, I sat there half a day, DPF's gone, €4,000. There's no way I'm paying €4,000 for a DPF. So I had to abandon the reloads, which I gave to a friend of mine. That was worth about £4,000 I lost on that. I had to limp it home. Over the Gothard with a DPF in limp mode, with DPF gone in limp mode, Matt, I was down to about 10 miles an hour going over the top of the Gothard. The queue of traffic was behind me. And there's people flashing their lights. And I can hear in the tunnel, I can hear sirens, right? They're coming after me. But I could see where it crests over the top of the tunnel. That's it. Once I'm down to the side, I was gone. And I never saw anybody. No police or anything. Because I was going to get nicked and I was in trouble for that. I was going that slow up the hill. It was awful.
Yeah.
Sat in the queue for the Dartford Tunnel. All of a sudden, DPF clears itself and starts regenerating, working fine.
No.
I swear to God, near and now. So I sat there, just not knowing what to do. So I took it into the garage in Birmingham I used, GOS, then over longer trading. They repaired it for like £400. So I've lost the windows and all that. Anyway, no problem at all. Next week, it goes out next week. it wasn't wholly the van's fault, this bit. As I went to Switzerland the following week, trying to salvage something, my phone just stopped working. So I go through Switzerland, I'm just thinking it's a problem in Switzerland. I get him to Italy, still not working, so I find his McDonald's with their free Wi-Fi. Goes online, EE's entire roaming network in Europe has gone down, right?
No.
You run your business with a mobile phone. What can you do? What do you do? So, you have no choice but to abandon ship again the second week on the trot. So, I head back up to the UK, and I figured out very quickly, when you turn your phone off and on, you have about 10 seconds of the phone signal working before it dies, and I didn't know what was happening. So, I'm writing WhatsApp messages, going to flight mode, so your phone thinks it's going off, but it's not, flicking back on again to send messages, and it's working to people to let them know I'm alive and well, but it's, anyway. Well, a mate of mine, who I'm not going to name, who'll listen to this, but he'll know, he then realised my phone was working sporadically, and every time I put it on flight mode, it was phoning me, and it was stopping me sending WhatsApp messages, and it was doing my head in. It was doing my head, I'm screaming at the phone, stop phoning. Anyway, gets back to the UK, phone started working again. I've done another week's money that week. The DPF then went again, the one they replaced in England that week. And then I can't remember what happened the following week, but Shan happened the following week in Italy again, right in the south. And at that point then I thought, I've got to get a new van. But just going back a minute, I'm jumping about, sorry. I remember the very first trip I did to southern Italy in my Sprinter. When you're down the A14, you come round and I can picture my head and you loop round onto the A14 about 50k from Bari, and there's a sign there that says Bari 50-60k, I think, right? And I remember the sun was shining, it was glorious, and it hit me. When you work for somebody, you have always the reassurance, you go wrong and make a phone call, they fix it. When you're on your own here in your own van, you are a long way from anywhere. You're on your own. If it goes wrong, you really have got to be resourceful. And I hadn't thought about that. I've been down that far, no problem at all before, but otherwise you had to reassure you, who do I phone? Now, it's like, hang on a second, this goes wrong, and it did go wrong down there as well later on. You know, what do you do? You know, it's quite a scary thing, and people, I think, unless you've been there working for yourself, it's very hard to appreciate. Having a reassurance, you've just phoned the boss up and saying, I've got a problem, can you sort it? And again, no problem at all. It really makes the job easy, you know what I mean? And it was horrible, horrible feeling at first. So obviously, you get used to it, but I'm sure everyone who's been an owner driver, be it an Arctic, a van, or a motorbike, would have had that feeling when you're that far from home when it goes wrong. What do you do on the side of the motorway? You have RAC breakdown cover, but as I found out with the DPF months later, you know, it's not going to be a cheap game.
No. And the thing is, as well, nowadays, before, when everything was mechanical, you have more of a chance of being able to sort it out the side of the road, whereas now, if it's like electrical sensor, DPF, anything like that, you've got a problem, haven't you?
So I'm about to name and shame a company now. So I got back when the van had cost me a fortune. I'll tell you what it was. The engine blew up on it, and I got a cheap engine put in it, which was a mistake. The engine went bang. That's what happened in Cornwall. So I came back. Right. I was in Cornwall on the A30, and the engine gave up. At that point, I knew I had to get another van. And I had, after wasting a load of money, I had, hypothetically, in virtual percentage, £20,000 a carry bag, right? At £20,000, I went to Mercedes, I walked into County, Milton Keynes, who is still there today. I said, hey, I want to buy a van, please. Okay, no problem at all. I said, I've got £20,000, what can you do for me? Our van is showing when they're really busy, can they phone you back? That was August 2016. As I talk to you right now, 1917, on the 24th, for 3rd of March 2025, I'm still waiting for that phone call. They never phoned me, ever.
Right.
I then spoke to a friend of mine, and he said, I've phoned Midland Truck and Van at Tamworth. They're not bad. And I've got to say, Midland Truck and Van at Tamworth in 2016, salesman, a lad called Joe, mustard, absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
Nothing was too much trouble for him. It went above and beyond for me to supply me a van, you know what I mean? And do you know what? The relief, and I think Ben Sheldrake touched on this when I listened to it this morning, having a vehicle with manufacturing warranty, it takes, just pressure goes from going for an older vehicle where you've got to rely on the RAC and backstreet dealers to fix when it goes wrong. when you're on the side of the motorway in Italy and it goes wrong, you just find Mercedes and sit and wait. It doesn't solve your problem of being late for your customer, but it'll half make you feel better knowing you've got the backup of the manufacturer behind you.
Absolutely,
From that moment forward, I would never run, if I ever did it again, would never run an old vehicle. But Mercedes, they got to know what I was doing. And I'd phone up, Tamworth were great for the buy the van from, but Birmingham were where all the workshops were. So I'd come off the boat at like 2 in the morning, I'd phone them up. And so vans do service, what time are you coming through at 6:30? And they would get ready for me at 6:30 in the morning and on the way through to Scotland from somewhere with a motorbike. They would get me at a minute's notice, and the service they gave me as a one-man band was just out of this world. And I cannot praise Midland Truck and Van. They're part of the Bellavici Holdings Group, Montgomery's and whatnot, that's who own them. Service they gave me was just unbelievable. The van was great fun. It was a little bit of it was to earn money and have fun, but it was also a box ticking exercise. I went to a lot of places that you shouldn't go to, and also you wouldn't go to an Arctic. So I'm deep inside the Arctic Circle, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, and also going up small mountains and things like that, you'll just never go up in a truck. That's what I enjoy about doing the pet van work. It's just a variety of places, and places that, again, you'll never go in a truck.
Yeah, that's it. Like, when I went out, I've been out to Malta a couple of times, went right down to the south of Sicily to Pizzallo, got the boat, got the sea cat out, and that. I went down there, and again, that sort of work now. People go to Malta, but they cheat and get a boat from Genoa. They don't drive the whole way, you know what I mean?
So for me,
the van was, like I say, it was like a busman's holiday, really, you know what I mean? For use of better words.
Absolutely.
I would pick a place where I'd go to. I earned good money out of it. I probably could have earned more. And looking back now with the job I do right now, I realise some howling mistakes I made with the van, but I had some fun. You know what I mean? I had some fun. I earned well out of it. And it just, all good things come to an end. And you'll know this yourself with a little Fiat 500 you used to put in the van. I earned very well out of them. I could phone the guy right now. I can get you a Fiat 500 from Brindisi back to the UK for €400 delivered.
Flipping
it. I was getting five times that.
Yeah.
I was on €2,000 a car.
Yeah.
And that was still quite cheap then as well, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It worked quite well when you had two on the trailer and one in the van, so it wasn't too bad. But, but now that just shows you, and that was the end of it for me, you know what I mean? When the rates were cut that much, you can't make money. And I found out I could make more money just running cars back and forth to Holland, out one day, back the next, do 3 of them a week. And I was earning more money doing that with the trailer, and it would work well. And then I'm embarrassed to say this, I amassed 12 points in my driving licence.
Oh dear.
And I attended court and said my piece and was very honest about it, and they allowed me to keep my licence. And I decided then, I need out of this, it's going to kill me some way or the other. You know what I mean? And I got a job doing French work for a bloke in Flitwick on an Arctic, just doing Ziegler French work for a week at a time. And that was great for 6 months. And then that itch came back. I need to go further.
Yeah.
And then the story I know you're waiting for, I went to Matthews. We'll leave the best till last.
Oh, yes.
I went to Matthews, and that there, I went there to tick a couple of boxes, Eastern Europe and North Africa. And, I got to tick them, didn't I?
You certainly did. Now, surely Matthews would rival PTM for variety as well.
Variety in terms of location, in terms of style of work. Trevor and Rachel are amazing people to work for, let's not lie.
Yeah.
But they're a one-trick pony in terms of fridge work. They got a handful of curtain sides, but I never saw one of them. I didn't want to touch one. But in terms of fridge work, when it comes to fridge work, now I'm going to sidetrack slightly. I went there at the back end of the whole bad publicity thing of Matthews. I caught the tail end of that, right?
Yeah.
And I actually went there and I asked Trevor outright in the interview. I asked to speak to Trevor himself, and he sat down for an hour and he spoke to me about it. And I commend the bloke for that. One of the best people I've ever worked for, Trevor. Really, really good bloke. But the variety of work they did and how they treated you was amazing. And I say to everybody, when everyone says, oh, I want to do European fridge work, go to Matthews. Go and try it. Ignore what people tell you. I'm yet to find somebody who goes there and think badly of it. They think badly of what they think they know. When they find out what they know themselves, they realise what a great job it is. And my only regret is I never went to Matthew's after the next show. I should have cut all the other jobs I've spent 15, 20 minutes telling you about out and gone from next show to Matthew's. So when I went there, I made an off-the-cuff comment to Rachel in an interview. And I said to her, I said, listen, you've heard this a million times. I'm going to shout again to you. You can send me anywhere. I will not let you down. 6 months later, I was in the yard and she collared me to one side and she said, can I have a word, Ben? And I'm like, what have I done? She took me into the office, sat me down and said, 6 months ago, you said something to me and I was really rude to you. What's that? She said, you said to me, I could send you anywhere. You wouldn't let me down. I said, oh, yeah, that comment. She said, well, do you know what? You've restored my faith because actually you've done exactly what you said you would do. You have gone anywhere and you've not let me down. She said, I've had a lot of blokes through the door who have said that to me and I've had to get rid of. She said, no, you've not let me down. It's really nice for a director to actually acknowledge they judged you wrongly. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I did a couple of, I went there in November. I kept it quite quiet at first due to obviously bad publicity and I couldn't be bothered with the bad comments from friends and whatnot.
And what people think they knew about that whole situation and were completely and utterly wrong.
Yeah, you and I both know the truth and we'll leave it at that. So I went there. I did an Austria, Germany, I did an Italy, did a couple of things. And I was in Holland day before Christmas Eve loading and they phoned me up with a big one. And it was the one I wanted. And they said, do you want to go to Morocco in the new year? And that feeling of excitement and terror all at the same time is what you want. And I can't say on this podcast how it made me feel, but you can imagine I was terrified. Yep. It's what I wanted. And so I went home and Mark...
Fear of the unknown.
Yeah, right. Well, Mark
That's what
had
it
been,
is, isn't it?
Yeah. Mark had been, and he messaged me, he gave me a number, he gets stuck, phone me. And I went home and had Christmas, and what was really funny is the batteries on the truck went flat between when I parked up and Christmas Day. So I phoned the office and told them, and they sent somebody out to fix them on Christmas Day. One of the fitters from Yarmouth came out to fix them. And I was at my mum's house. When the fitter turned up at the farm where I lived and parked the truck, I forgot to tell the farmer I lived in, he was coming, Luke was his name. He turned up with a shotgun to shoot the fitter. The fitter phoned up with Trevor and Rachel. The bloke's wielding a gun at me. This is a true story. So they phoned me up. I said, sorry. I phoned Luke up, squared it all up, and everything was fine. So I loaded in Worthing on the 27th of December.
So the truck batteries were flat Christmas Day. Were you actually driving on Christmas Day?
No, I wasn't. No, we parked up, but I always...
Yeah.
There was something about... FD64KDF was the registration number of my truck, and there was something not right with it. So I just... When you start a vehicle, you get to know your vehicle. Every driver has the same truck. You become like part of the truck, don't you? So you know how it is. And I went to start at Christmas Day, it wouldn't start. So I messaged him and said, I'm really sorry to bother you, your truck won't start. I can get it jump started. Do you know what? I'm going to backtrack. It was Christmas Eve because Phil King lent. I had to go to Northampton to borrow a battery charger to charge the batteries to start it, and then they sent the fitter out Christmas Day. So it was Christmas Eve. The battery went flat. I do apologise. I've not made notes. I told you earlier on. Anyway, so the fitter came out. The gun wielding thing happened, and that was that. So they replaced the batteries, and I said, I'll just charge them. They'll be fine. They said, no, you're off to Morocco, right? It's the unknown. We need to make sure the truck is right. So the problems on this trip started then, and you'll find out a bit more in a second. So I loaded Worthing. I left the house at 5 o'clock on the 27th of December. I loaded Worthing. I'm going down the M20, dashboard lights up like a Christmas tree, all the alarms go off and everything. Straight into Channel Commercials at Ashford. The one thing Matthew was good at, money, I'm not going to say it didn't exist then, it wasn't a problem. Get in there, get it fixed. Just get it fixed. No messing around with backstreet dealers. Straight into DAF, get it sorted out. In Channel Commercials from most of the 27th of December with DPF problems, no problem at all. So down into
your nemesis.
Down into the Clear Customs, and there was a problem with the paperwork that they sorted out, which that wasn't the last time I see paperwork problems. That was fine. So I get out of there, and then coming down just before Le Mans, the dashboard lights up again, the same thing it did in England. Into DAF at Rouen. I was there for that night, and the following morning they had me in the workshop a whole day sat in Rouen, and they got me out of there about 2.5 hours on a card left. You got to put a card in, silly. Anyway, so I parked in Allen's on the services. In the morning, I come out of there, and I'm reversing out in left-hand drive, reversing out, crunch, and I've reversed into a barrier and broken the backlight on the trailer. Believe it or not, my biggest problem wasn't the backlight. I thought, oh, bugger, it's going to ruin my picture now. The light missing. That's what I thought. My biggest issue was that anyway. So I did a temporary repair to that, got myself going down the road, and the truck was then fine. So got down, Alan's on, down into Spain in a shift, no problem at all. And I got down to just north of Seville. I had a break there for New Year, spent New Year's Eve in a garage at Seville, and on New Year's Day, down to Algeciras. And again, no problem at all. The agent had been celebrating New Year in Algeciras, in Spain. So he met me and showed me what to do, and that was that. Well, I don't know if you've been to North Africa or not, but they don't...
No, it's the one I've not done yet.
The boats don't run like Dover-Calais do, I found. Yes, you get a booking on a boat, but you just get the next boat. It doesn't matter if it's Morocco Link or whatever the other ones are. You just get the next boat. So I'm sat there thinking I'm told I'm getting I can't remember the company of Morocco Link. But I've got a Morocco Link boat, and I thought I was getting another one. So it was a bit confusing to me. I was a bit worried that I wasn't getting the right boat to go to the right place, because you wouldn't book on P&O in Dover and jump on a DFDS boat.
DFDS.
Yeah, you wouldn't. And that's what I likened it to. And I learned very quickly, this place doesn't work in a normal way. You know what I mean? You're not dealing with people. So I got on there, got my passport stamped on the boat, and I got off the other side and parked up. The agent was there. Well, he came to see me. He said, I'll park here near the restaurant. No problem at all. I'll come and see you tomorrow. And tomorrow came, not today. And as you well know, we sat there for the best part of a month. I got asked to drive a truck by the agent, and I need to be very careful with the agent. Many people know who he is. I've had a couple of phone calls off him asking me to be careful on Facebook what I say about him, so I'm going to be careful now. He asked me to drive a truck for him. An Italian company, the boss had been ill or something had happened to him, and could I drive this truck onto the boat for him? It was the boat, the Grimaldi Lines boat, going to Civita Vecchio, I think we're going to. Anyway, no problem at all. But I had to go out of the port to pick this truck up, or go through customs to the other side of the scanner to pick this truck up. So I went out there, and I look back now thinking, Ben, what were you doing? So I get in his truck, and his friend's there. The left-hand drive, Italian-plated Scania, a drawbar, on an A-frame, which was fun, having not driven one of them for about 20 years, you know what I mean? But luckily, we only four. So I'm sat in this truck, and I go into the scanner, and the agent and his mate disappear. I'm looking around me, and you've got all these trucks around you that have been impounded for drugs and that. And it dawned on me, am I just a fool guy for something not very nice here? And I was genuinely worried. And as dodgy as the agent and his mate were, when I saw them never end of the scanner waiting for me, I did feel a sense of relief, I won't lie. But then immediately we got through the scanner, his mate jumped in it, who could drive the truck, and I sat in the passenger seat. And I'm thinking, what exactly was I here for? You know, it didn't make sense. But anyway, so that was that. We parked the truck up, and we go to walk back into the port. I didn't take my passport with me, because I didn't believe I needed it. Now, this is a problem. So it wasn't a problem to the agent. He said, oh, I know a shortcut. Do you... You know on London Underground, you get like, the glass doors that part when you put your ticket on? Do you know what I mean?
Yes, right? Like the booths to go through.
Anyway, so we're in this building, and there's been security trying to stop us. We're in this building trying to cut through the port. We get down to the bottom of this staircase, and there's four coppers there with machine guns pointing at us as these glass doors have moved. I'm terrified. I've got four Moroccan policemen pointing a gun at me, you know what I mean? This is not what I signed up for. I'm just a lorry driver.
I just want to go to Morocco.
I'm not out of the port. I've not actually been to Morocco yet. I'm still in Tanjamed. So we actually chat to them, and eventually we... They get with the agent's mate turns up, and he's Dacia Logan, and he takes me back to the entrance to the port. But look, I didn't realise this. Obviously, where I was parked was just off the boat. Tanjamed Port, if anyone has been there, is absolutely huge. It must be 7 or 8 km at least across the port from the boat to the exit of the port, out of the port into the Morocco itself. So I'm now up at the entrance to the port. I've got to get a little bus back to the lorry. No problem at all. So I get on this bus, the agent sat a couple of seats behind me, and it's become very clear there's immigrants on this bus with me as well. Well, I've turned around and one of them had a lime green baseball cap on. That's how I remember him. I can't see him. So anyway, every maybe 300 metres, the bus is stopping and customs agents or security getting on looking for immigrants. So I'm right. Sat there minding my own business. I'm in shorts and a T-shirt, bright red iPhone 11. I'm feeling very English at this point in time, standing out like a sore thumb. All of a sudden, this security guy has kicked something under my seat, and this person in the lime green hat has let out the biggest scream where he's kicked him in the ribs. And I've dragged him out from under my seat and carted him off. He's under my seat hiding. Oh, that's nice, isn't it? So we go on and on. A couple more stops, a few more immigrants, and that's that. We're now back to the point I can see my truck. I'm like, thank God, I've never been so pleased to see a super space cab in all my life, I tell you, believe me. Anyway, so we get out of the truck, we get out of the bus, and I go to walk. All of a sudden, two armed guards are pointing guns at me, and they're saying something in Arabic. I believe me, Moroccan speak Arabic. They're saying something in Arabic, and it turns out there's an immigrant behind me, trying to walk behind me to get into the port. And I'm like, I can't say what I was thinking. I'm like, for God's sake, Ben, what's going on? And this, they're pointing guns. I'm like, what have I done? Just let me back to my truck, please. Anyway, I was back in the truck. I'm like, well, that was an interesting afternoon. It beats sitting in the truck watching Netflix, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That was that. So the next day come, and one of the Hungarian drivers turned up for Matthews. And I'm like, all right, okay. He was in and gone in 36 hours. And I'm still sat there. And they then come to me and ask me to drive another truck. They then came to me, the agent, and said, oh, Ben, can you drive another truck? The same Italian man, we've just found one of his trucks in Morocco. This one wasn't in the port. This was a good couple of hours south of where I was. I'm in this car, and I'm thinking to myself, Ben, what are you doing? Did you not learn the first time? Did you not learn on the first one just to say no? And we went down to drive his truck, and it was a rear steer when the trailer wouldn't lock in, so we couldn't get it out where it was. And they were getting quite irate. And I spoke to this guy on the phone, and he was telling me, and I was like, I do understand how to make a rear steer work. This one won't work. You had to leave the truck there, and they were rather annoyed about that. But it was an experience. And then I got back there, and then one day, so I think you'll be cleared tomorrow. And I was cleared tomorrow. Yeah. And I was told a couple of different stories as to what the delay was. One of them was they signed a form in the wrong box. One of them was they should have used a black pen, not a blue pen, right? The other one I got told, which I believe you want to believe, the person who raised the paperwork in Worthing before Christmas never completed it. Then he didn't come back to work after Christmas, left a job, which didn't turn up back after Christmas. So somebody else who had never done the paperwork completed it, and there were errors. And they had to send paperwork from the state, had to get airmailed over to Morocco to get me out of there, because I was going to be there a long time. That's the most plausible story that I was told as to why I was there. I never 100% got to the bottom of the delay, but I think it was 24 or 26 days, but I know I got in, it was 26 days. I got in there on the 2nd of January and I left there on the 28th of January.
Wow.
And then, it doesn't finish there. So, there's more. So, we get in the lorry finally to leave the port, and I drive through the 7 or 8 Ks up to the gate when I leave. Now, I don't know, when a truck's MOT'd, a trailer's MOT'd, you're supposed to weld the C number to the chassis, or you used to have to. Matthews never did that. They used to put a yellow plate on the back above the number plate with the C number, which allocated the first MOT of a trailer. When I got to the gate to leave, they saw the C number. That was what they believed to be the registration number of the trailer. Right, not mm-hmm. my. They didn't. They thought that was like a European vehicle, had a separate trailer number plate, and they'd only imported the truck, not the trailer. And they weren't going to let me go. And they said you have to fix it. Well, in good old fashioned Englishman, a roll of gaffer tape, I soon taped over the top of it. If they can't see it, it doesn't exist. And they let me go.
Yeah.
and then I said goodbye to the agent, and that was the last I saw of him. So I thought. And then about an hour down the road at the first payage, I get stopped by a policeman in a check. I couldn't understand him. He couldn't understand me. And out of nowhere, there was no cars anywhere near me. Out of nowhere, the agent turned up and saw it out. And I was like, where the hell did this bloke come from? You know what I mean? But yeah, it was interesting, and it was a life experience. And obviously, I can't tell the whole story on a podcast. At some point, I will fill you on a beach that I can't say. But yeah, so,
what was your final destination there then?
Went down to Rabat.
Casablanca or Rabat?
It was A9 Alder. So down to Rabat. There's a bridge there with blue lights, and you go over the bridge, you come off at the next junction, you come round, and then you go down into A9 Alder itself and GSK. What's really funny, the town looks like it's been in the Ukraine war. The town is run down, not a lot of it. You turn up this lane, there's mud there, there's burnt out buildings there, and then GSK have got this beautiful palm tree like lime plant with all like racing car red and white curbstones outside, lovely gates in it. And you think, typical pharmaceutical industry, nobody's got any money, but the rich people are doing well.
Yeah, it's like a mirage in the desert almost.
Yeah, we can. Okay, and then I never did it, but apparently I'm told some people have been right down to the south of Morocco, the other side of Agadir, to reload melons. The same man who loaded, we used to load melons out of Greece for, Chris, he used to load the melons out of Morocco as well.
Right, okay.
I can imagine that's a journey. Yeah. A friend of mine actually, who worked for Ford, he went down to the other side of Agadir 6 months after I went down into A9 Alder. And he said it was another world down there. It was like, where I went to, it was a bit like France, you know what I mean? Like quiet most ways. It was quite nice, but he said when you get to the south of Morocco, it's as you expect, it's dusty, single track roads, a bit of desert, camels and everything, you know?
It was a
box tick though going to Morocco. That is the reason I went to Matthews, and people laugh when they said this, but Matthews actually spoil any other European job for me. No other European job would come close to that one.
Yeah.
Greece and Romania were like just normal destinations in the same way that Manchester and Bradford are for people in the UK, you know what I mean? It's like the way it was, and that sadly for me, I could never go back to European work for anybody else now because it wouldn't be.
You peaked.
Yeah, that's it. And I'm happy with what I do now. And at the very start of the conversation, you asked me how I ended up in the office at HPH, and I'll now tell you. COVID actually helped me with that. I went to work for HPH. I left Matthews, did a little bit for a mate with a container, which didn't work out. And then I went to HPH, and I thought to myself, if I do 6 months here, the money on there is good. It'll help me out, and we'll see. And then COVID struck, and I spent quite a lot of time in the yard between we tip leads at 9 o'clock in the morning, reload. You might be 1700 Waitrose at Milton Keynes when you get back. So you might have 3 hours in the yard being just around the corner from where we are. So you sit in the yard and be chatting to the boss. And Danny, my boss, he obviously saw something in me. And a couple of years in, he came to me and said, listen, do you fancy learning a bit more about the office and that? So me liking knowledge and to learn something, I did that. They put me through my transport manager CPC, as you know, last year, which is the hardest thing I've ever done in my life.
Yeah.
And at Christmas time, things in the company took a turn. And on February the 1st, I was officially installed as transport manager at HPH Milton Keynes.
Wow.
And I'll be honest, I drove a lorry the other morning for 10 minutes, and I can't say I don't miss it, that'd be a lie, but you know what, I love working in the office. It's like the challenge every day is different. No 2 days are the same, and what's the right way of doing something today will be the wrong way of doing it tomorrow. Even though it's the same problem, the solution won't work, and I love it, you know, it's what I've wanted, and this is my life now. I don't want to go back on the road at the moment. I'm sure I have days where I will want to go on the road just because I feel that way, but it's been a good journey for HPH, and I think I'll be there for a long time still. I think that's me now. I'm settled here now. Up until I came to HPH and Danny, I used to job hop 18 months. I'd change job, you'd get bored. But here I'm 5 and a bit years in now, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that says quite a lot, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. I think it's good for you to settle down, you know what I mean? I can walk to work in 15 minutes, I can drive a car in 5. If my car don't start, I can still get to work, you know?
Yeah.
but I've had an interest in driving life, Matt, as of yourself, you know what I mean? But there comes a point where you've got to me and some friends often say your memories are only good for people who want to listen to them, like yourself and maybe people listening to these podcasts. I know loads of people who couldn't care a single iota about my memories and pictures. I'm sure you do have the same in your life too.
Absolutely. Yeah, not interested at all.
That's why the groups on Facebook and Truck and Drive and Instagram and whatnot are great, because you've got like-minded people.
Yeah. But you sometimes have to look at the bigger picture in life, don't you?
Yeah, and I think as I got older, I realise now that the bigger picture is actually being away all the time. And obviously when you're on Trans Am, you're away, like, it made my 4 months on Matthews look like child's play some of the times where you did, do you know what I mean? It's no life.
No, it is on the road, but when you reflect back on it, it's, you know, the amount of family things and friends, you know, weddings, barbecues, so on and so forth that you've missed because of the job. You know, don't get me wrong, I wouldn't have changed what I've done, and I'm just lucky that I did it when I was young as well. But yeah, there was also a very well-known chap passed away this week who was found in his cab, I believe, you know, and I think that might have been a wake-up call for a few people as well, because he obviously loved his job. But, you know, it depends what you want in life, I guess.
It was quite a shock, actually, when I found out about that on Monday. It was quite a shock. I know the person, I'm not paying them, obviously, but it's quite a shock. And, you know, you're absolutely right. You know, there's people you think in this world, immortal is the wrong word, but you kind of look at people and think, yeah, and then all of a sudden, in a blink of an eye.
That's it.
That's life, okay. But as you say, I wouldn't change my career for the world. I've had a great career. And I say, my career peaked with Matthews, and now I've settled into a new one, you know what I mean? And I've got to start learning things all over again, you know. But it's great fun. I enjoy knowledge. I like to learn things and learn of my boss now. And I keep praising him for another reason, and it's true. You know, he's a great bloke to learn from, you know what I mean? He's man-managing skills, his business skills. I couldn't wish for a better person to teach me, you know what I mean?
Yeah, fantastic. Well, I wish you every success with it, Ben.
Yeah, I know you set your CPs here. I know you're in the same vein, with the same opinion as me. It's a bloody hard thing to sit here.
Cool, yeah. Yeah, is it just? Yeah, I'm glad I got to do it again.
Oh, God, yeah. I say anybody who sat it and passed it, I take my hat off to them, given you've got to dedicate your life to it for 10 days.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I think we'll wrap this up, Ben. It's been fascinating. Really enjoyed it. And perhaps we'll maybe catch up with you later in the year and see how it's all going.
Yeah, no problem at all. Thank you for listening to me witter on for now. I love talking about myself. It's my favourite subject.
Well, we'll have a nice week next week, and we'll catch up soon, Ben.
Cheers, you, mate. Take care, buddy. Bye.
Lovely. Thanks a lot. Cheers, mate. Ta-da.
Thanks for listening to the Truck and Driver podcast, sponsored by Fortune Tyres. Fortune Tyres and International Tyres, bringing you innovation and reliability to support your operation. Learn more at internationaltyres.com/fortune or call 0121 552 6888. Drive forward with Fortune Tyres.